Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, April 28th, 2011. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. Well, this week, Sean Terrell shares results from his efforts to improve the formula for correcting refractometer readings post-fermentation. And he tells us about his new job at Silverton Brewing Company in Silverton, Colorado, where he brews beer for a living now at a high altitude. If you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. You can also find our brewer's logbooks to help you log and track your batches of beer. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm Basic Brewing, all one word. Also, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james. And our show page on Facebook is at facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon, think of us and click on our associate link first. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you the show, and we greatly appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site, too. You can now find our Basic Brewing iPhone and Android podcast apps on their respective stores, and we're on the BlackBerry podcast directory now, too. And we're on Stitcher. I haven't said Stitcher in a while. We're on the Stitcher application as well, so you can get new episodes sort of streaming without having to download them. The form is now up and running for the Brew Your Own Magazine Basic Brewing Radio Collaborative Experiment on glassware. Does different glassware have different effects on the consumption and enjoyment of beer? Experiment with beer in different styles of glasses, record your notes, and share those notes with us. The deadline for the experiment is May 15th. That's sooner than you think. It's just around the corner. You can find the online form at basicbrewing.com/experiment, or if you prefer, you can simply send them to me in an email at james@basicbrewing.com. Also, remember our other collaborative experiment on rehydrating dry yeast. The deadline for that one is July 15th. Plenty of time for that one. I want to thank everybody for getting in touch and asking about our well-being. This area in the country has been really hammered with bad weather. In the northwest corner of Arkansas where we are, we've just got rain and not the twister, the bad, really bad stuff, the twisters and all that stuff down south of us. But we have got plenty of rain, around 17 inches in just a few days. And as I'm recording this, it's still raining. So, but we're fine health-wise. Attitudes may need adjusting, but so how does all that relate to home brewing, you might ask? Well, let me tell you, when our crawl space flooded the other day, my wife and I implemented one of the skills that I learned in brewing to get the water out. Is we got a solid foundation, and it, you know, once the water gets in there, it's going to take a while to get out, and it's not going to get out on its own. So we live on a little bit of a hill, so what we did was we filled a couple of garden hoses with water, being sure to get all the air bubbles out, and I put one end of the hose under the house, meanwhile, you know, making sure that none of the water got out, and my wife put the other end down the hill to the driveway, and once I put the top end under the water, she took the sprayer thing off the bottom end, and presto, there's a siphon. And it took a while, but we drained the water out from under the house using just the power of gravity and siphon without using any pumps, something that I might not have thought of if I weren't a home brewer. So there you go. Home brewing saves property. I was going to say saves lives, but I don't know. It might save lives. In other news, it's been reported that beer has been banned at a reception for the royal wedding. It seems that beer's not an appropriate drink to serve in the presence of the queen. Lottie frickin' da! It's good enough for my grandma. It's good enough for yours, William. you know, your mother was a Spencer, too, so we're probably related. And I, by the way, I'm also angry that I didn't get my invitation. I would have torn it up. I don't know. Can you tell I'm a little stressed with the weather? Let's move on to an interview that I recorded when I was in a little bit of a better humor. If you'll remember, a while back, Sean Terrell came on the show and asked for your help. He wanted to send, he wanted you to send him some data to help him refine the formula used to correct refractometer measurements taken after fermentation. Because when you take a refractometer measurement after fermentation, the alcohol level skews the refractometer's readings, and you don't get an accurate number. Well, a good number of you responded, and we appreciate that. And we talked about the results that that Sean got, his new formula. And also we talked to Sean about his new job brewing professionally in Colorado, way up high. Sean Terrell, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thank you for having me again.
Now, you have a new job, or new since we last talked, and we will talk about that shortly. But we, when you came to town, we launched an effort to help you with your experiment on refractometer correction post-fermentation. Now, let's back up and give us some background on what that was all about.
Yeah, okay. And I guess rather than repeat myself excessively, we can just refer people back to that original interview for some of the details.
Right.
We talked a little bit about how to use hydrometers and refractometers in general in brewing, and it's probably not worth repeating all of that. Essentially, the major issue that we were talking about is that refractometers, at least the ones that are used by brewers generally, are designed to measure the specific gravity of a sucrose solution. So you just have simple sugar and water, you put a couple drops on your refractometer, and it tells you how much sugar is in it. Now, once you start fermenting that sugar solution, whether it's beer or wine or what have you, you're also going to have alcohol in solution. And so now you have a three-phase solution, and just using a single scale to try to get specific gravity out of that isn't going to be effective. You just can't read the refractometer directly anymore. But it's mathematically, it's not a complicated enough problem that it shouldn't be solvable. With an initial refractometer reading and a final reading, it should be possible to get a final gravity.
So there are calculators out there, formulas that you can use to enable you to use your refractometer post-fermentation. But you were dissatisfied with the current formula that has proliferated out there.
Right. And rather than formulas, we should say formula, singular. As far as I know, there's only one out there, or there was only one out there. And this is the one that's built into any brewing software, ProMash, BeerTools, BeerSmith. It's in various spreadsheets and JavaScripts that are scattered all over the internet. As far as I can tell, and I've spent a fair amount of time searching, there is only just the one formula that's used to try to correlate final gravities.
And you were finding that it wasn't as accurate as you had hoped, and you asked us to help you gather data. And so what I did, and some other brewers did as well, is we got either a refractometer or a hydrometer reading before fermentation, and then took both a hydrometer reading and a refractometer reading post-fermentation and sent you the data. So were you able to get some good data points from that?
Yeah, we definitely did, and I should say a big thank you to everyone who sent in data. We ended up with 72 data points being submitted, which is really a great number to do some statistical analysis.
Wow.
The original formula that I had worked out was based on just 12 of my own, and got some pretty good results and was able to do some interesting curve fitting with that. But without independent data sets, there's really no way to be sure that I wasn't just fitting a formula to my own beers.
Right. So how did you do?
It actually stacks up pretty well. There is a new version that I've put up on my website. It's version 3.0 now, and it's very slightly different from the old one. I changed one of the coefficients in the formula. But using that new formula, I guess I need to back up here a second. The big caveat with any of these formulas, the old one or the new one, is that they are not going to be able to give you accurate final gravity results for extreme beers. Mm. When I say extreme, I don't mean, you know, your triple IPA with 3.5 pounds of hops in it, but something that is extremely high gravity, extremely low gravity, very, very high attenuation, very, very low attenuation. So of those 72 data points, there were 4 that had attenuations below 50%. Mm. And it just isn't possible to fit an equation that will give you good results for something that low while also maintaining accuracy at a more normal attenuation range.
Huh. So you basically threw those extreme sets of data out.
Right. Throwing them out sounds kind of pejorative, but
you disregarded
didn't use them to determine the accuracy of the equations.
So how much better is your equation than the old one?
Well, okay, let me throw some statistics at you. The standard equation that's out there all over the internet and in software and everything, on average for these 68 data points, gives a result that is 1.7 Brewer's gravity points below the hydrometer final gravity. Mm. And then has a standard deviation of 2.2 Brewer's points. And if you, that's not terrible. You know, it could be that that's good enough for someone who just wants to know roughly where their beer is ending up. If your actual final gravity is.
So for instance, yeah, if your beer ends up at 1010 in actuality, the formula would tell that it's around 1008, somewhere around there.
On average, yes, that it's going to give you something about 2 points below the actual reading. The standard deviation is more of a concern. You know, 2 points is not bad, but if the standard deviation is 2 points, that means that you're frequently going to get results that are off by 4 points. Hmm. And that's getting into the area where I would consider that to be unacceptable, just in terms of dialing in a final gravity. You know, if you want to know it within a point or two and you don't care about those minor variations, which as a home brewer is probably a healthy position to take, that's fine. But 4, 5, 6, the maximum deviation for this, the standard correlation was over 8 points.
Wow.
And that's at the point where it's really just not giving you useful information.
Yeah. And the thing is, is there a way to know that if you've got a smaller deviation or a larger deviation?
Without taking a reading with a calibrated hydrometer, no.
Mm. So how does your formula do?
Well, I actually have 2 new formulas that I worked out. One is a simplified cubic, which has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, which has 7 terms. And that has a mean deviation of plus 0.7 points, so just under 1 gravity point, and a standard deviation of 1.3 gravity points. So the mean and the standard deviation are both roughly half of the old correlation. To put that in context, of these 68 data points that I ended up analyzing, 56% of them were off by less than 1 point, 85% by less than 2 points, and 97% by less than 4 points.
Yeah. So it's better.
Yes. What's interesting, though, is that I also fit a linear polynomial, which is only 3 terms. So it's something that you could, at least in principle, quickly work out with pencil and paper. That has a mean deviation of 0.1 gravity points. So much less than the resolution you're going to get with any hydrometer.
Huh.
And a standard deviation of 1.4, so only slightly worse than the much more complicated cubic formula.
So the uh, if So how is this going to impact the brewing world? I mean, this sounds significant to me.
Yeah, it definitely is. If you're interested in using a refractometer to determine your final gravities, either of these new formulas really, I think, would be sufficient. You know, within that little bit of wiggle room that we talked about, if you're only worried about a precision of one or two gravity points. And to put that in context, if you have the typical, you know, $8 triple scale hydrometer you got at your homebrew shop, you definitely can't read that more precisely than 1 point. And if you're being honest with yourself, probably not better than two.
Right.
They're just not designed to be read at that kind of precision. If you need to know final gravities more accurately than that, you can spend $20, $30 and get a nice final gravity narrow range hydrometer, which if you're really interested in dialing them in precisely, like in a commercial brewery setting where you need to hit your FG every time, that's probably money well spent.
But if you're a home brewer, the biggest question is probably, is my fermentation done?
Right. And in that case, all you need to do is take readings frequently or maybe not so frequently, and once it stops changing, you know you're finished.
Mm-hmm.
So you could easily do that with a refractometer, and on top of that, also get a value that's reasonably close to the actual final gravity and maybe not worry about using your hydrometer at all.
Well, cool. So those results are, and those formulae, is that the plural of formulas?
Sure, let's go with that.
I'm trying to sound smart. You know, you're overshadowing me here with your, you know, nuclear science degree. I have three, you know, I clept out of my 3 hours of math. Bachelor of Arts degree in broadcast journalism required back in the day. So, but I did do trig in high school. So, you know, at one point I knew some numbers. Anyway, right, well, the one formula and the other formula are both on your site, and I'll put a link.
Yeah, and
to that.
I put all three of them together in a spreadsheet so people can download it and keep track of their data and see how well it holds up. And if people are doing that, you know, definitely still get in touch with me because I want to know how well these things are working in the real world.
Yeah, consistent verification is a good thing. Trust and verify.
Now you do sound like a nuclear engineer.
There you go. So cool. Is there anything else that you want to talk about that before we move on to the other half of the conversation?
You know, for the purposes of this interview, I don't think so. I do get a lot of emails and questions from people about just in general how to use a refractometer in brewing. And so I think we can just refer people back to the previous interview on that where we did talk about it for a little bit.
Sure. And that was – I learned some stuff on that one too. So, yeah, go back and listen to that. You also – when you were here, you left some beers with me, and I have one left – and it is this impressive 12-ounce bottle with this sort of silverish gray wax cap on the top. It's been dipped in wax, in other words. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to open this beer and sample a bit of it while we're talking.
All right.
I'm not going to kill the whole thing. And you're going to tell us why. What is this beer I'm about to open?
This is I guess I've been calling it a double barley wine, for lack of any better term. this was just an experiment in pure, extreme high-gravity brewing. Used sequential wort feedings and lots of simple sugar additions. So the effective OG was right around 1.2.
An imperial barley wine.
Exactly. It ended up being something like a 23% ABV beer. and really doesn't taste like a beer at all,
right,
despite being just a scaled up version of more or less a typical barley wine. It has a sort of a port-like or wine-like character. And I think at a certain point you just get a lot of sweetness and a lot of flavor from alcohol, especially the higher alcohols.
Wow. I finally got the lid off. the head.
The wax is good for making sure you don't crack open one of those after you've had a couple other beers. Yeah,
accidentally. Oh, wow. That is a, you know, the head retention is not so good. But
is there's head retention?
No.
I haven't seen that in any of the ones I've opened.
There's none at all, but not to be expected.
It is all but still. It's only carbonated to something like 1.5 volumes. We have a very radio-friendly pause right here.
Oh, my. Now, it is very – boy, you could put that on pancakes. It's very viscous, but not in an offensive way. It's not overly sweet at all.
Final gravity on this was off the top of my head, I think something like 1.042.
Wow.
So, if that was your original gravity, it would make a decent Pilsner or Blondale.
That's delicious. It's very kind of mapley, maple syrupy. There's a lot of, it's got some sort of roasty characteristics, as you might expect. Very malty. That's delicious. I'm going to set that far away from me now. I'm pouring just a small, just like maybe a finger or two, maybe a finger and a half in one of these little, plastic cups that you see in the beer judging.
And
so that's.
I wanted to try to find something like a 6-ounce bottle for those, but couldn't find any. 12 ounces is probably a good amount to share with 2 or 3 other people.
Well, sure, at least. Well, anyway, that's delightful. And while you, I'll be drinking that while you have the rest of the conversation, mostly by yourself. But you are a brewer at Silverton Brewing Company in Silverton, Colorado, are you not?
I am, yes.
How'd that come about?
I have the world's second best job.
What would the world's best job be?
I'm told that the large breweries have people who only do quality control tasting and don't even actually brew. So I think that might edge out being a brewer.
That's what I do and not get paid for. So I just tasting beer. So how did that come about? How'd you get the job and how's it going?
Well, I'd been out of school for, I guess, about 2 years now. And the economy being what it is, was not having any luck finding engineering jobs, and figured as long as I was spending several hours a day online, submitting resumes and looking for job openings, I'd start hitting up Pro Brewer too. And actually only a couple months after I started submitting brewing resumes, got an email and came out for an interview, loved the town, was excited about, being a brew pub brewer, and there you have it.
So talk about the town, talk about the brewery.
Okay, well, I guess a lot of the issues that are probably more or less unique to us as a brewery are because of our location. So Silverton is on the west slope of Colorado, the extreme southwest corner of the state, at about 9,300 feet. We have a year-round population of about 400. We do, a lot of tourist traffic in the summer. A lot of skiing brings people in the winter. But very much just a small, hard-to-access mountain town. There are, on average, probably about 10 days a winter where you cannot get in or out of town because the pass is closed. So in terms of trucking in ingredients and supplies and things like that, definitely you need a little more coordination on that front.
So I'll avoid the Shining references.
They've all been done.
Yeah, I know. I'm sure they have. But talk about what's your brewing system like?
We're on sort of a hodgepodge. The owners like to call it a Frankenbrew system. We have an old dairy tank for our mash tun. One of the interesting challenges we have is because of the hard freeze and multiple freeze thaw cycles every winter, there's no hard plumbed propane or natural gas in town. So our system is 100% electric. We have an electric kettle. We also have I think probably for a small brewery, kind of a standard just mix of fermenters. We have some old Grundys. We do have some Conicals. One of the interesting things we have to do, and we actually just put this in a couple months ago, is in the winter we have to be able to heat our fermenters and cool them in the winter and the summer. So, you know, the glycol jackets, it's not the most difficult thing in the world to do, but it was a kind of a fun engineering project putting together that heating system. It was one of the first things I did at the brewery.
So are you finding that you're kind of not a big fish, but one of the few fish in a small bowl? I mean, it seems like you probably have an opportunity to make a fairly large impact on a brewing establishment, you know, your first job out of the chute.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think that would be true anywhere if you came into a brewery our size. And I should mention, I'm the assistant brewer. We do have two brewers, me and the head brewer. And, you know, you're a jack of all trades right from day one. With any brewing job, you're basically a full-time janitor first and foremost. In addition to wort production and monitoring fermentations and just anything and everything that could go wrong, you know, repairs. And one of the first things I did when I came in was set up our yeast lab. You know, we're doing cell counts and viability counts and repitching and, you know, just paying a little bit more attention than they were previously to propagating the yeast. You know, and that's something that you would have a full-time microbiology person at a larger brewery. And so really just as a small brewer, your job on a day-to-day basis is going to run the gamut, everything from highly technical things to scrubbing floors.
Mm. And have any of your recipes been produced?
Yeah. And that's really exciting. We did actually Red Bull, the energy Red Bull TM GmbH CC energy drink, came in the late winter, early spring, and because of our extreme skiing reputation here in town, did a skiing skills competition and commissioned us to brew a single batch for that. So that was actually my first original recipe as a professional brewer, so that was really exciting. And then our first seasonal that we're going to lead off with this spring is a Maibock, which is one of my homebrew recipes that the head brewer and the owners and I tasted and liked, and we just scaled it up directly and brewed a seven barrel batch of it.
Wow. Well, that's got to be fun. I mean,
it's the truth is that on a day-to-day basis, there aren't many exciting new things that happen in a brewery. You know, you're a production facility first and foremost. You have to get those flagship beers in the tanks and out the door. Not that isn't a fun job. I love it. But there aren't new experiences every day like there would be if you were a home brewer, where every time you brew, you're doing something a little bit different. So anytime you get to design a new recipe, it's really exciting.
So are you a draft-only production house, or do you package in any other way?
We do package. We're in cans and bottles and draft accounts.
Oh. So you get to see, I mean, it seems like you get to see just about everything there.
Yeah, you really do. And like I said before, as a small brewer, you are going to do everything every day. And, you know, also just coming in from being a home brewer, the packaging side of it is really the part that you don't have any familiarity with. So we're, you know, on our scale, it's a very high maintenance, labor intensive process, packaging. And it's just something new that you have to learn right off the bat.
Now, at what altitude are you?
We are at about 9,300 feet.
Wow. So I get questions every now and then from people who are moving to, you know, say Colorado or somewhere of a higher altitude, and they have questions, you know, about the effect of high altitudes on brewing. So what are the hurdles that you are facing, you know, being that high up?
Well, one of the biggest and most immediate things that you would have to think about is boil temperature. Here in town, we boil at about 194 degrees Fahrenheit, about 90 degrees Celsius. And that has a lot of effects on the beer. Maybe most obviously, your hop utilization is going to be reduced. Also, all the benefits that you get from the boil, things like DMS reduction, the SMM, you know, that sort of creamed corn flavor that you get, especially with like a Pilsner malt. You really have to stay on top of that. We do a 105-minute boil minimum for all of our beers. And if we're doing something like the Maibock that had a lot of Pilsner malt, we did a 2.5-hour boil.
And I'm assuming that that comes from experience. I mean, I'm assuming that they have done batches in the past that weren't up to par, and then they adjusted the brewing. I'm assuming that it's not assumption-based.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say that's true, actually. That particular issue with the SMM boil-off is just one of those things where it's better safe than sorry. Especially if you're brewing a commercial batch, the last thing you want to do is try to, you know, cheap out on, in our case, electricity consumption, you know, knock 30 minutes off your boil and wind up with some DMS in your beer. So it's really probably difficult to overboil at the scale we're talking about. You know, there's no substantial volume reduction that happens in a 6-barrel kettle.
Now, is when you are talking about the hop utilization, is there a trade-off between, say, extending the boil to get more out of your hops and adding more hops to get more alpha acids into the boil? I mean, what are your thoughts around that?
Well, extending boil time to increase utilization doesn't really have any effect after a certain point. I don't have a table in front of me, but if you look at the normal utilization formulas for a 60-minute boil, you're probably at maybe 27% utilization, and at 90 minutes, you're at 30%. And beyond that point, you're just not going to pick up much. It's an exponential die-off. You max out in the low 30s somewhere. Essentially, at a certain point, you do just have to put more hops in. And I haven't quite, in my home brewing, I haven't had the opportunity to do a whole lot up here because of the winter. We get 100-some-odd inches of snow a season. But it seems like it's something on the order of 50% increase in hops. And that's obviously just based on me tasting it and saying, that does seem more or less like what I would be used to at sea level.
What about the effects on fermentation dynamics? Do you see anything that happens because of the altitude?
Well, again, at home I may have. My first homebrew batch up here, I fermented at the same temperature I would have at sea level, which was about 68 Fahrenheit. And I feel like I got more esters out of that than I would have at lower altitude. In a commercial brewery, that's probably not going to have any significant impact because of just the scale of the fermenter. The wort column, or once it's fermenting, the beer column is so tall that the pressure of the liquid itself is going to substantially outweigh any effect from the atmosphere.
Now, I would assume, I'm just thinking along the production line and how, you know, that pressure could have an effect. When you go up in an airplane and you drink out of your plastic water bottle and you put the cap back on, when you come back down to the earth, you can tell that there's been a change in the pressure, you know, because the bottle may have collapsed somewhat. Would there be any change? Well, I guess once you get it in the can or in the bottle, that's a closed environment, and so it may not affect the carbonation levels, or would it?
Yeah, it doesn't affect the carbonation level directly, but it can impact some of the things that contribute to the experience of drinking the beer. And just to put things in perspective, we're from going from sea level to 9,000 feet, we're talking about 0.3 volumes is the change in carbonation. So it's not going to be a massive difference. But we do overcarbonate slightly when our beers are opened at this altitude, because we sell the majority of our beer at more like 4,000 or 5,000 feet. And things like the hiss when you open the can, the amount of head it generates when it's poured, those do depend on the differential pressure. Huh. And we would rather have something that seems maybe a little more foamy than you'd like up here, where relatively few people drink the beer, than the majority of our customers having, you know, poor head retention or something like that. But we're talking about we overcarbonate by something like 0.2 of a volume. It's not a massive change.
And also,
and actually, it's funny you mentioned the pressure in a plane, because commercial airliner cabins are typically pressurized to about 7,000 or 8,000 feet. So when I fly, I'm descending based on the atmospheric pressure I'm used to.
So are you like Superman when you come down to sea level?
It's kind of ridiculous, yeah. I noticed that I forget to breathe. It'll be 60 or 90 seconds since I last took a breath, and I just haven't had to think about it.
I was kind of kidding, but
it's really wild. The atmospheric pressure up here is about 70% of sea level.
Wow. Now, being at that altitude, do you, for safety reasons, do you have to, say, moderate the alcohol content of your beers, or are you mindful of that in the serving environment when you get people, you know, from down here, you know, coming up to ski, say, in the resort environment, being tourists? The alcohol is going to affect us differently from someone who's acclimated to that altitude.
Yeah, that is absolutely true. And I got in trouble, I think, my second night here. Where I drank an amount that would have been totally normal at sea level and had some deleterious effects. Which is that is the wonderful thing about living in a town of 400 people. I walk everywhere.
Mm.
So.
Or stagger. That in that case.
But
probably.
Yes, people who come up here to visit, you definitely do have to be careful. And I haven't actually had the experience of our restaurant bar being open, because we're only open for the tourist season, but that's definitely something that we have to watch out for.
Oh, so you haven't I'm looking at your resume. You got there in October. Mm-hmm. So you haven't experienced all the tourists coming in.
No, I've been here twice before, but as a tourist. So yeah, it's a completely different night and day difference in the town from winter to summer.
Oh, I can imagine. Now, should we mention that you have been taking a break from brewing sort of accidentally?
Yeah, it was actually 2 weeks ago. Well, as we're recording this 2 weeks ago, not our brewery facility, but the building next to ours essentially burned to the ground. So the fire department did a fantastic job. We have an all-volunteer fire department here, and they saved our building, but we do have a lot of water and smoke damage. And at this point, we're not back up and running and brewing yet. It's probably going to be at least 2 or 3 more weeks until we can do that. So we're trying to ride it out with our existing inventory as best we can. And at this point, I don't even know enough to really be able to talk about that. We haven't started construction or anything like that. We're just taking it day by day.
Yeah, scary thing, but it sounds like you came out well. No one was injured, and you guys are lucky to have as little damage as you do.
Right, so. Definitely. No one was hurt in either building, and insurance is what the rest is for.
Yeah, and thank goodness. Thank goodness you guys were insured. So, maybe you'll have more time for home brewing in this downtime.
Yeah, it would have seemed that way a couple of weeks ago. We had sort of an Indian spring. I don't know if that's a thing, but we had a 2 or 3 week period where temperatures were above freezing almost every day. And then starting in the past week, we've probably had a total of 3 feet of snow.
Wow.
Which is not unusual. This is not late in the season for us to have snow up here. But I had a brew day scheduled for last weekend, 2 weeks ago, and got snowed out. And I have still been postponing that.
Wow. Well, we're entering severe weather season. And we're recording this interview a little early, we've got our first wave of severe weather coming in through this evening, they say. So, you know, cross your fingers for us or whatever.
We're
light some birthday
here in Silverton.
Candles.
We're getting ready to head into what we call mud season, which is when the snow melts and the entire town just becomes a swamp for a few weeks.
Do you have like wooden sidewalks, you know, like the Old West or?
No, we don't even have those. With the exception of Main Street, our roads are all dirt.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
I was kidding. But
in a very real sense, this is one of the last places you could really consider yourself to be in the Wild West.
Wow. Well, it sounds like an intriguing place.
It really is, and I'll just put it out there. If any of your listeners are in town, definitely drop me a line, and I'll show you around the brewery and things like that.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun. Because we, you know, obviously, we've been to Colorado, not that part of the Colorado, but it is definitely a haven for good beers.
Within the 50, we'll call it a 60-mile radius, I think we have 10 or 11 breweries.
Wow.
So this corridor is really every bit as active in the brewing scene as the Denver area, just a little bit less accessible.
Well, cool. Well, is there anything else that you can add, any advice that you can give homebrewers, you know, that want to make the jump into, you know, going pro?
I would say do your homework first. It's not that the information isn't out there, but in the course of a brew day, especially brew days, but really any day in a brewery, you're going to be extremely busy the entire day. And the less you have to refer to books and manuals and the internet and things like that, the better off you're going to be.
Mm. So get your chops, so to speak, in your home brewery. And that'll give you a leg up in the professional world.
Absolutely, yeah. And if you're an all-grain brewer and you're used to using a pump to move wort around, because that does introduce some issues that you just don't have in a gravity system, the packaging is really going to be the only side of things that you're going to have to start from the ground up. But yeah, do a lot of brewing at home and you'll be fine.
Well, excellent. Well, this has been fun, Sean. And
yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
I will. I have to go sit down now because I'm almost finished with my sample here. I have to go contemplate my navel.
Yeah, it's nap time after a little bit of that.
I'll just go ahead and lie down in the basement. That way, if the severe weather comes, then you know, I'll be good.
There you go. It won't even wake you up.
Well, it's good to talk to you again, Sean.
Yeah, likewise.
Well, thanks again to Sean. I'll post a link to Sean's results in the description of this episode on basicbrewingradio.com. And we wish him lots of good luck in his new job. We hope everything gets straightened out after the fire in good time. And we hope that everybody who goes to Silverton, who listens to this show, will drop in and tell him we said howdy. He's a good guy and good brewer as well. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. You can see our DVDs on our website, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits, along with our Brewer's Logbooks and our Basic Brewing shirts as well. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Aqua Cone Aqua Spike Green Set of 6 Automatic Plant Watering System and Coleman 70-Quart Extreme Cooler Blue. I can brew with that. Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping, and we greatly appreciate your support. And don't forget that you can also join the American Homebrewers Association or subscribe to Brew Your Own Magazine through the associate links on our site as well. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.